Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the first episode of a new podcast series from Football.London on Tottenham Hotspur's move from Wembley back to the site of White Hart Lane. In the first episode, Alistair Gold chats to stadium announcer Paul Coit on his memories of White Hart Lane and the big move to Wembley.
Start in the past.
Yep.
Let's go back to that wonderful place, White Hart Lane, where we've obviously spent many years, the both of us.
Yeah.
What was it like when you kind of first found out, essentially, it's coming to an end? You know, it's... there's going to be no more White Hart Lane for me or anyone here.
You know what? It was, to be honest with you, it was only probably the last two games that it really hit home. Because, of course, if you remember, there was no official announcement that it was going to come to an end. So although we knew, and I think all the fans kind of knew, it wasn't, you know, signed, sealed and delivered that this is going to be the very last season. So there was that. And it didn't feel... I don't know about you, but it didn't feel like, oh, this is it, this is the end. It only truly felt like it was coming to an end was for the last game and for the finale for me. Because however much I'd go in there and think, God, this is, how am I going to feel? How am I going to feel? What do I feel like now? I didn't feel anything. Really? I didn't feel it because I didn't. It's probably part of me that didn't actually believe it because it just seemed normal that I was going in. And it was only the very last, I mean, there's a whole, I'll tell you about that afterwards, but there was... when I walked away or during the finale, that was when it felt like this is actually ending.
It was, I mean, the only other one that I kind of felt, ooh, this is a little bit historic, was the North London Derby.
Yeah.
For me, it kind of felt like, oh, God, this is the last one we're going to have here.
Mm-hmm.
And the noise was phenomenal that day. Can you remember that? That absolutely mental. I mean, did there anything in that one? Did you kind of feel in, obviously, with the North London Derby coming up this weekend again, albeit at the Emirates, there was something special about that day, wasn't there?
There was. It was really special. But again, for me, it was more me saying to myself, this is the last one, instead of truly feeling.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I know it sounds a bit bizarre. But it was more, wow, this is going to be the last one. Oh, let's hope. But without actually truly, because I didn't really, and I'm a pretty emotional person. I mean, for when we were talking about putting the finale together, the amount of people that were saying to me, yeah, watch Coit, because, yeah, we know that you're going to cry. And I'm going to, what? What am I going to do? You know, it's like, it's because a lot of my half-time seem to have turned into weep fests. So it's like Scylla doing surprise a lot of the time. But yeah, it was great, and I know what you're saying, and I did fit, but I didn't feel it deeply until the last game.
I get you. So before we get to the finale, which was brilliant, let's kind of look back a bit, because obviously you'd spent more than a decade there, hadn't you? I mean, what, there's got to be some standout moments for you, special guests maybe you spoke to, or moments in games that you were able to kind of witness from the sidelines, because you're quite close to the action as well, really.
Yeah. God, let me think. First one I ever did, because I'd been at the club probably... maybe two seasons, maybe a season and a half. And I was brought in. I'll just give you a little background on how I got the gig in the first place. So I was working for Capital Gold and a DJ on there. It was not doing sports, just doing, you know, doing an afternoon show. And I'd been a season ticket for years and, you know, and been since I was a little boy. And my dad was a big fan. My dad got ill. And so we stopped going. We hadn't been for a while. And I think it might have had something to do with the fact that we got rid of David Ginola. I was so pissed off. That's it. Yeah, I'm not coming back here again. It's a disgrace. Might have had a little bit to do. So anyway, then we had a game against Norwich, which was, what, 2004, I think it was. And my wife's from Norwich, and we'd never played Norwich since I'd been with her. So I spoke to Dave. You remember Dave? You know David Jensen, Kid Jensen.
Yes,
he the kid.
Yes,
hey.
Yeah.
So I said to Dave, I said, do you know, because he knows everybody. I said, do you know, he was doing the morning show and I was doing the afternoon. I said, do you know anybody at Spurs? And he said, yeah, I know Mike Rollo. You know, he's the commercial guy. So I said, do you reckon he can sort me out with some tickets to take my dad and my wife? And he said, yeah. So anyway, Mike calls me And I'd sort of had very minor dealings with him. Even to me, he seemed like a giant because he worked at Spurs. Mm. So he phoned me and he said, you know, we'd love to have you, you know, your wife and your dad, come along and have a meal. I'm like, this is amazing, you know, give me hospitality. And then he said, how would you feel about hosting in one of the lounges? And I'm like, are you kidding me? And he said, no. And he goes, you know, would you? And I said, I'd love to. I'd love to. It'd be amazing. And, you know, I'd do it for nothing. It was ridiculous. So then I get a call the day before the Norwich game. And he says, Martin Chivers isn't in. Could you fill in for him? And I'm like, oh, my God. What? This is ridiculous. I'm my dog after Martin Chivers. This is crazy. So anyway, I went in and I'd interviewed film stars, pop stars, everybody. You know, I've done millions of interviews, a ridiculous amount with big stars. But when I went in there and I met Pat Jennings and I met Ralph Coates and all those that were in the first team I ever saw and Martin Peters, I really found it hard because I was totally in awe. And I just... And I was talking to him. You know when you think, I'm talking to him, and you're thinking about it. It's like going on a date with this beautiful woman that you've gone for first and you think, oh, my God, what am I going to do? Oh, my God. And so I was thinking, what do I do? And I sat enjoying the game. And I didn't do anything. And they said, well, we want you to do the man of the match. So I was like, oh, God, what am I going to do? I'm sitting next to my wife. She's going, what's the matter with you? I was like, I just can't. This is just terrible. I couldn't. Anyway, cut a long story short, I was all in a state. As soon as I got on to do the man of the match, I had the microphone in my hand, and I felt totally comfortable. And it was like, this is easy. I can do this. This is no problem. Because I don't know about you, honestly, but I often find, I don't call it real life a lot of that, because you think, you're doing your job, and then it doesn't feel... So anyway, I did that, and that was fine. And then they said, Mike said, you know, could you come back next week and do it next week? And it just went from there. So then year later... or so, then they said, look, we've got David Ginola on the pitch at half-time. Can you do an interview with him? And it was at Fulham game. So I said, yeah. And they said, Sky are going to take it. I mean, yeah, fine, no problems. I thought, oh, my God, what are we going to do? So anyway, I walked. In those days, we didn't have the camera right pointing at my face. It was one of those that was up at in the stand. So, and you'd see the screen. Anyway, they said, right, go on, off you go. So walk into the middle of the pitch, which is where I used to do it. So I just started walking out to the middle of the pitch. Looked up to the right and I saw the Jumbotron and I could see myself walking, which then I realised I lost the power of putting one leg in front of the other. So I'm sort of stepping like this. So as I'm walking along, I think, oh, my God. Anyway, I looked down and I had no idea what, because being a Spurs fan since all my life, I had no idea what effect it would. It didn't even cross my mind. I looked around and I thought, oh, my God. And I started getting a head spin. And the grass started moving up and I've never passed out in my life, and I was this close to passing out. And I thought, I'm going to go. I'm actually going to faint on the bench in the middle of LA with all these people. And so anyway, I walked up and then I looked over to the other side, and as I'm introducing David Ginola, and the first sight of David Ginola I see is this guy with his arms open going, hello, my friend. So that was how the most surreal start. So that was it. And then after that, then it was just like, I mean, now it's fucks, I've done so many, and it just feels normal now. But the effect it had on me still, I mean, I never, ever take it for granted because, you know, each time I think, OK, this will be it, this will be the last one, but I'll still get away with it.
So. No, you do a fantastic job. And, I mean, without obviously making anyone feel that they're not favourites, are there kind of any players over the years you just used to, it was a pleasure to kind of interview? Obviously, as a journalist, I have that when I'm in the mix zone, things like that, but I'm guessing for you there were certain people that just like... just magic kind of came out of the mouth almost when I spoke.
Well, Ginola, I loved David Ginola because at the time it was worth paying your season ticket just to watch him run down that wing. Wasn't it? I mean, the guy was unbelievable. And the charisma, everything. See, I hate it when someone nicks my microphone. It's just I'm left hanging. You know, it's happened a few times and I just like standing, I don't know what to do with my hands. What am I supposed to do? Mickey Haz was doing it, and there's one where you actually see me wrestling the microphone with it. Don't grab the microphone. He would just take it out of my hand and do his thing, and I'm left standing. I think, you know, whatever, he can do it. So he's great. Because of all, you know, I tend to my guard, and he knows what to do. Hero-wise, Hoddle for me was the greatest player I ever saw play for Spurs.
Yes.
So the first time I ever met him, still I get a bit, you know.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
If I ever, when I find myself in a situation I still can't get out of my head, I'm talking to Glenn Hoddle, so that's still there. Still, Sheringham does it for me as well.
Nice.
Yeah, love Sheringham. And, guests that we've had on the pitch, I mean, moments that I'll always remember was, I think, one of the, my favourite ones was when we had the who was left of the 61 double team. Wow. So that was for the 50th anniversary. Yes. So they were all there and they're all, you know, they were gents, really. And Dave McKay was there. So Dave McKay, who I had the absolute honour of watching a game with, legend, sat next to him. I mean, just legend. Any Spurs player that you speak, or still says he was the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
So, bless him at the time, he was getting a bit unwell and you could see the look in the eye and he wasn't, you know, 100% and he wasn't really all there, bless him, and it was the start of a bit of a slide for Dave. So it was said to me and I thought, well, you know, I was going to walk along the line of them. And bless him, Bobby Smith was in hospital at the time. We didn't know that we'd lose him only soon after that because he'd had a fall. But anyway, so there was Dave McKay was there. And as I walked along and spoke to each one, and I was thinking, and it was said, look, best bet is, you know, don't speak to Dave because we're not sure how he'll be, how he'll feel, whatever. Yeah. So then it's only as I'm walking down the line, I'm thinking, Christ, what am I supposed to do? Because I can't walk past Dave McKay. You've got the greatest Spurs player. I'm speaking to, you know, there's you know, Terry Dyson, and then there's Peter Baker, and there's Cliff, and I thought, what am I going to do? So I just thought in my mind, I thought, I know what I'll say. And I'll just say, I'm going to do something now that hardly anybody ever did on the pitch at White Hart Lane. I'm actually going to walk past Dave McKay, and I didn't mean it that way. So anyway, and I said, Dave, great to see you. Anyway, he looked at me, and for me, all the times I met him, just this lovely older gentleman, the kindest, nice. I'd always heard the stories, but meeting him, I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
Anyway, he looks at me, and this is on film, and he just looks. He almost grabs me by the cheeks, and I see these steely eyes. Look at me, he says, "What you see, son? What you see?" And you could, oh, shit myself. This guy was like 80, and I could see that look, and I went, "Oh, Dave, I'm just saying that." So, but before then, we'd worked out how we were going to do it, because they often phone me and they say, "Look, how do you see it working? How can we put this together?" And I said, "Right, this is what I think. We'll get pictures, their old pictures, those old cigarette card pictures. So if you can find pictures of when they were in their prime, put that on the screen, and then it's pretty much the juxtaposition of seeing them now. So then I'll say one line, and this is what I used again for the finale. So, and it was going to be very simple, and it would be, you know, Dave McKay, 60-61, ever-present, played this many games, FA Cup, blah, blah, blah. That was it. Something very simple. And then he would walk out. And then they would have the picture on the screen, the old picture, and then it would dissolve into him coming out now. Nice. So I thought, that were good. So that's how we'll do it for each player. Great. Classical music. Let's have some classical music playing, and let's pick the right music. So let's make it really moving and make it really beautiful. Okay, fine. That's how I see it going. Okay, let's do it. I had no, and I'm going, this is great because it will get everybody going. But I had no idea how it would affect me as well. So when we got to, and I said, look, I'll say the late, what was it? I think it was with Danny Blanchflower. I think we said the late great, or something similar for Bill Nicholson as well. And his daughter was there, and it was the same with Danny. And then by the time he got to that, I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm crying my eyes out here. And it was one of those. So it's great. It's just an absolute joy to do that sort of stuff.
That sounds amazing, to kind of be part of something that you love so much and contributing as well to it in a way as well.
And the 125. Can I tell you another one?
Go for it.
125. Look, I'll keep you here all day.
I love it.
125 for that celebration. That was another one. It was on the spur of the moment. And we had all the players that were all going to, all the great ex-players that were going to come out pretty similar to the finale. So it was before the Aston Villa game, and they said, right, okay, we're ready to go. Stand in front of the camera, all ready. And then I was told, we're not ready. You're going to have to fill for 2 minutes. Can you fill for 2 minutes? And I'm like, Christ, what am I going to do for the fill for 2 minutes? And I'd forgotten that everybody was given a flag. I completely forgot about it. So as I was just about to say something, out of the corner of my eye, and I can see it now, next to the tunnel, there was this little kid holding his flag. And then I remembered. And that was when I said, look, before they come out, I want everybody in the stadium to wave their flags. We've given flags to Villa as well. Then everybody started waving, and that I will never forget for the rest of my life. That moment I looked round and the whole of White Hart Lane was waving the flag. Oh man, it was unbelievable. And that was only because they said, and there's that famous picture of the flags waving, and that was then because they said, we're not ready. Can you just fill for a second? And it was only because I saw that little boy with the
That's
flag.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And that was weirdly kind of, I suppose, a precursor to the finale in the
first,
wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's really weird. Yeah, I completely forgot. That was a mental game as well, wasn't it?
It was 4-4. Yeah, yeah. Eunice Kabul scored at the end, didn't he?
He did, and everyone went mad. And on any other day, a 4-4 against Villa probably wouldn't have been that great, but it just felt right. It was so Tottenham Hotspur.
Because they were singing, weren't they? Well, the Villa fans were singing Happy Birthday.
Yeah.
Didn't they go like 3-1 up or something?
Yeah, they were ahead. It was like, ahead, yeah.
I mean, it was just thinking, oh my God, this is just so typical us. And then it was even more typical us that then we came back.
But it summed up 125 years. Absolutely. What I was going to ask you, and this may not be something that kind of affected you at all, but I just thought about it this morning. I remember Martin Joel, end of the season, used to do like a speech on the pitch thing. Is that only because you triggered it when you said about grabbing the microphone?
Yeah, yeah.
Did he take that on? I remember him doing like a real passionate chest thumping speech. Yeah. Was that meant to be a you talking to him,
mate? Yeah, it was. It was. There was me, there was Ray. Now, I remember Ray. Ray was our photographer and he had one bad leg on, Ray. Bless him. Just the loveliest fella and he'd been there for years. You'd always see him come out with taking the pictures. He's not at Wembley now, he's retired now. Ray Pickard, his name, he's a fantastic bloke. And there was me and Ray, and I know me and Ray always had a little joke about someone nicking my microphone. When you stand in the middle of the pitch, it's really difficult to hear. I mean, think Wembley's bad. I mean, when you're in the middle, it's really difficult to pick up what people are saying.
Oh, really?
So we got Martin, that was it. We did the usual, you know, lap of appreciation, and then Martin was going to come in and say, will he say a few words? Yeah, okay. So I'll ask him a question. Anyway, then he grabbed the microphone off me, and I can hear this, like, and I'm thinking, anyway, Ray leans over and he's going, go on, he's next to bloody microphone. Go and take it off him. Go on. And it's me, Ray, and Martin Yol in the middle of the pitch. And this is Ray going, don't stand for that. You want to get it off him. And it was so funny. But that was where I've told this story in the past about Martin Yol, because I think it was that one, or it might have been the year before, is that I was going to speak to him on the pitch. And that year, and I'd said, you know, OK, so what happens now? It's the summer. You know, what do? You go off in summer? I said, where are you going? Are you going somewhere nice? Yeah, where are you going on a holiday? And just said that to him. And he, anyway, just moved on. So anyway, about 2 or 3 months later, I was doing an evening with Martin Yol and Chris Hughton. And it was at Enfield's Working Men's Club.
Yeah.
So you know how when you meet, you're not sure whether they know who you are. You sort of worked with them before, and you try and drop a clue in, and just to say, oh yeah, that was me, by the way. So anyway, Chris, I knew, and then Martin, I just, oh yeah, Martin, by the way, and talking about grabbing the microphone, I said, yeah, Martin, by the way, you know, when we do the interview, if you do us a favour and not grab my microphone, and then go, because I'm left bound. He went, oh yeah, yeah, because. Oh yeah, yeah. On the pitch at the end of the season, he goes, "Yeah, that guy says to me, where are you going on holiday? What kind of a fucking stupid question is that?" And I go, "Yeah, you won't get that from me, Martin. You won't get it." I said, "You're getting out of that from me." That was. I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." And I'm thinking, actually, I thought it was a really good question. So yeah, that was that.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
I thought it was an excellent question. Yeah, I'm sure you ask that all the time when you're sitting there in the press conferences, Maurizio. Yeah, somewhere nice on holiday this year.
Yeah, that's one of our leading questions.
There you go. Just relaxes him and then goes straight for the big one.
I mean, yeah, come on, Martin. I could go on for ages about Martin. He's such a character.
There you go. He is.
But let's fast forward him to the finale.
Yep.
How much of a, because it sounds like you do play quite a role in kind of like forming certainly parts of the ceremony and stuff and that involve you. I mean, how did it work with this one? Kind of how early were you involved?
I was told. Oh dear, there was always talk about it, and I'd speak to Emma Taylor in marketing, who was across most of it, and then I'd say, and she goes, "Yeah, it's in hand. We'll let you know when you need to know. There's something going on. We'll let you know when you need to know." Is it? Oh, yeah, no. So anyway, then God, when was it? It was probably a couple of months before. It'd been talk. There's Theo Delay. You're probably aware of Theo. Yes. Theo's a great fella and great director. And he'd made the film about the 125 that came out. So they went to him, said, right, this is the sort of thing we want. And then he then moved it on a bit. And then I was told that Theo was doing it. And Theo spoke to me. And then we had a chat about it. And then it went into, there was a committee of about how many was it? Probably no more than about 9 or 10 people. It went obviously further up, and then it went up to Donna and Danny. We'll find out about, but originally it was that. So Theo had put together the original idea of how it was going to be, you know, we're not going to have Adele, it's not going to be some big superstar, because everybody's thinking, oh, it's going to be Adele, it's going to be this.
Yeah.
It was all about the club, and it was a bet. Right. It was going to be simple, it was going to be tasty, it was going to be Spurs. So then I was brought in, and then it was, then that was the interesting thing, that the first meeting we had, when I did ask about, see, they're going to kill me for this, they did ask me about people running off, I said about people running on the pitch, and they said, no, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's not your concern, Paul. Yeah, it was my concern. So anyway, it was, so we went through everything, and you know, and I also should mention the band, and I always mention the band, who were unbelievable. And fantastic. These guys, it was put together by, there was talk about having original marching band, you know, a good military band, moved on, and then Steve Sidwell, who was the musical arranger, very talented guy, you know, he's got goodness knows how many awards, not Steve Sidwell, the footballer, no. Steve Sidwell, the musical arranger. So he was brought in, it's a big Spurs fan, and he was asked about, you know, what do you think, and he said, well, look, you know, I could put together this band. So this band, when I met them, probably in the rehearsal a couple of days before, you see these guys walking in with old trombones. Oh, you need to think, who are these fellas? These guys, the best in the country. He's pointing, Steve's pointing, he's going, those fellas over there have probably played on every film, British film soundtrack for the past 40 years. That guy over there is the finest trombone player in the country. That guy. Anyway, we did a little test, and just I'm going to be flip-flopping all over the place. Yeah, so, anyway, we did a little test in one of the lounges. This is on the Thursday before the Sunday. And anyway, I stood up and I said, well, and they said, well, you read through some of the intros and then we'll play the. Anyway, my God, in this room, you should have heard. I was just like, my, this is amazing. And I'm talking along with the music. It was just incredible. So these guys, they stood out there in the rain. These weren't some just like ragtail, you know, load of people that just played track. They were the best in the country, these were, and the way the song, and if you listen to it, you know, the Aussies going to Wembley and all that, the way it all segued, and then it was all, it all ended on my, when I'd speak, it was just, they were brilliant. So they were in, so there was Steve in there, and there was so anyway, then we would talk about players, then who the players were, and Simon Felstinger, you know very well, he was involved in that, about contacting different players. There were certain players that couldn't make it. We know about Gazza, you know, Gareth Bale couldn't come over, because everybody that we wanted there, you know, was asked.
Yeah.
So then it was like, how are we going to say it? I said, we can't do one name. It won't work. I've got to do a line. And also, I want it to be, you know, not just they've done this, and I'll vary it. So I just went home and I wrote this stuff, and then they said, "Yeah, okay, that's great. If you know, it needs to be factually checked," I said, "I think you're fine. All facts are correct. I think you're fine." So that was all fine, and that was the stuff. Well, you know, I'd do a serious one, and they'd say he's only got one knee, Ledley King, and so just vary it around.
Yeah.
So there was that. So I did all that, and then I wrote the speech at the end, which was another one that it was just literally. I was sat at the kitchen table, and I thought, okay, well, I'll just write a few things, what it means, because I lost my dad only about 3 months before, who took me, and I thought of what it meant to me, and it was all about you know, families, and you know, and it was, and that's what I wanted to make it. It was actually double the length of that, that it was cut in half,
really?
Because it goes on, it would go on to say, it's about, you know, passing to sons and daughters and blah blah blah, and then I'd say, but most of all, it's all about glory. That's what, that's how it was going to end. But we were running out of time, so that
of
got
course,
cut.
Yeah.
So, and then it was now, you know, and then time to say farewell to Whale Lane, the world famous home of Spurs. So that was it, which was just the most unbelievable honour to be able to say that. Like.
Wow.
So the day before, we had an event. I think we had some sort of supporters event, and then I had a meeting, and then I'd done the stuff on the Thursday, and they said, look, you've got to do it really straight. This has just got to be really straight. So I was sat in a room with Emma, and I'm just delivering, and she's going, all right, slower. It's going to have to be slower. You've got to do it even slower. Just, and then I was told, listen, if you feel that you're going to go, if you feel like you might go, don't worry. It's fine. And I still don't know whether that meant we'd like you to or it's okay. But that was all I was told. And so when I did do that last line, and there was all this, did he crack on the word home? Was it, what was the word? The world famous home of the Spurs. Don't know. But there was never any worry. I was worried that I would feel emotional, but I was so determined to deliver it right and make sure it was right. It was only afterwards that was when it hit me.
It was perfect.
And that was when it hit me.
Oh, no, it was. You just did it so much justice.
Thank you.
It was superb. And, yes, and we must touch upon the other, obviously, Aaron. Something subsequently I gave you so much praise for because I just thought it was amazing the way you dealt with it. Talk us through the moment you saw the fans breaking from the stands and onto that pitch at the whistle.
Okay. So I was told to get down to the tunnel about 5 minutes before the end of the game. So I was down there ready, had my earpiece in. As anybody would know me, I would have my obligatory nervous wee before I would start. Oh, my God. We've got, how long have we got? 30 minutes, 30 seconds. I've got to have a piss. I've got to go now. So that was it. So anyway, then I'm back in place. I'm ready to go. Players are running off. I'm ready. Everybody's in position. They're all ready to put everything together. And then Pete would say, you know, stay in your seats. And then this is coming up later. Because this was all done, if you notice, we had all these speakers around. We didn't use those until the finale happened because then it would be bang and everybody would take notice. So I remember Harry running through and people grabbing hold of him. But he looked happy. He looked fine. And everybody would come around. And then I'm looking and thinking, shit. Everybody's running on the pitch. What are we going to do? Everybody's coming on the pitch. I'm thinking NBC in America are going to take this live. 90-odd countries around the world are going to take this live. I can't allow this not to happen. There's too much in this. This is too important. It's too important for the club. It's too important for all of us. We've all got something in this, and everybody here, we don't want to miss this. So Pete Abbott did what, you know, who does all the announcing and said, you know, for everybody, get off the pitch, nothing. And then something clicked, and I just ran up to the little room behind where the dugout is. So you've got to give me the microphone. I'm going to have to do this. It's so ridiculous. It sounds so ridiculous. There was, and as I ran out, and I'm just, and then Donna Cullen came down as well. And she was saying, you know, I said, look, I've got this, fine, we'll do it. And then she was whispering stuff, and she was on the same page. She was going, you've got to save. This is so important. I said, trust me, I'm going to say that. That's what I'm going to do. Just leave me with it. It's going to be fine. Yeah, it's going to be fine. So I'm saying, please get off the pitch. So it started off, you've got to get off the pitch, go off the pitch. Then I'll be honest with you, Alex, I don't know what I said because all I knew is that I just spoke from the heart and I just said, you've got, look, this is so important to us. You don't want to miss this. We don't want to miss this. You've got to go back to your seat. But the thing that was in my head, and I still don't know, did everybody go back to the seats they came from or just go back to anywhere? I don't know.
I think they gathered, yeah. I don't think everyone went back from my view.
Yeah.
But it was just from where I was sitting, you could just see the looks on people's faces. They went from kind of having a bit of a, oh, this is lovely, kind of we're enjoying the last moments. And then you were kind of saying stuff like, you know, yeah, this is such a wonderful moment, you're going to miss it, you're going to, you know, this is going to be marking the end of this wonderful state. And you could just see their faces starting to turn a bit like, oh, this is getting a bit awkward now. I kind of feel like we're holding things up and this is something special and maybe we've had our fun and now it's time to go. And it's just, I will always remember that. It was as much as you can big up a man on a tannoy, honestly. Because obviously you've got so many other strings to your bow with the interviewing and stuff like that. But in terms of tannoy usage, it was amazing, honestly. They just turned and went. And then, you gave us that wonderful finale.
It was. There was a couple of things I remember. There was a couple of blokes that came running on the pitch, and he was like, I mean, bless him, these were your old hardcore from the 70s. Yeah. These guys have been pushing 60. They both had a fag on. They've come running over, and they've wanted to sit in Maurizio's chair and have a picture. I remember one of the guards has come over and one of the securities come over and said, lad, you've got to go back to your seat. And they've gone, F off. Yeah, we do. We F in life. So normally, in real life, I'd never go. Anyway, I've gone up to these. I've gone, fellas, what are you doing? Listen, do me a favour. You've got to get back. You know, we've got all this. And they've gone, oh, yeah, sorry, Paul. Can we have a selfie before we go? And I've gone, all right, come on then. I'd love to see that. And so they come every selfie. Then they went, come on in, we're going back. And I said, I appreciate it. Then I remember there was saying something about a patch of green. I remember saying that. I remember going, this is a good sign because I can see green.
Yes, I remember that.
I can see green. So keep going. This is great. Just keep going. And then I was concerned about afterwards because then we had players coming on with kids. So I remember before we started the ceremony, that's when I went out and said, look, please stay where you are because there's kids that are coming on, there's babies and dogs and small animals. And so if you could please. And everybody did, which was, I was surprised, which was incredible. But you know what, it worked, didn't it? I mean, the whole thing, but even with the pitch invasion, everything was right. And if that didn't happen, that we wouldn't have seen the rainbow.
Yeah.
It was, everything was, nobody can look back and regret the pitch invasion because everybody went back and, you know, to be there, it was the right thing to do. And the fact everybody went back. It was incredible.
It was, and it wasn't an angry pitch invasion. It wasn't a look at me pitch invasion. It was a real kind of trying to soak up the moment. Yeah. I think that was all it was. I was just trying to remember. Did you get soaked as well? Did they give you a brolly?
No, I didn't get a brolly, but I was very carefully placed to stand under the stand, so I was all right. But you know what? I met a guy. I did an event. Where was it? It was up in Wellingborough with Ledley King about a week ago, and a guy comes up to me and he said, "I've got the penalty spot from Park Lane." I said, how'd you get it? And he said, I went on, looked around, and he dug it up with his foot, and he got the penalty spot. And I'm like, God, I wish I'd got something like that. And he dug up the penalty spot with his foot. Now, that's a smart man.
That is a smart man.
You know, that's thinking, going, yeah, I'm not going for the celebration, I'm going for the penalty spot.
He knows
spot. And he's
hidden in the crowd. He knows he can get away with it.
He knew.
Actually, that kind of leads me on to my next thing. Did you take anything? Any little memento? Were you allowed to? Did you do it anyway?
The night before, I think it was that night, they went in and they had 12 hours to clear everything. And I'd made jokes, it wasn't a joke, I said the week before, to the people that I work with, and I said, look, can I bring a screwdriver in? And they went, ha, 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 and you go, yeah, ha, ha. No, I was actually serious. So I was given something, I was given a sign, and I was given a sign. It was just a big, I think it was from the director's box, big cockerel with that was above the director's box, and bless him then, I said, look, if there's anything you just grab for it, I'd really appreciate it. What I really wanted was the huge sign outside the ground with the map of the ground.
Yes.
But it turned out it was just so bloody huge, so it wouldn't have gone anywhere. So this thing was big enough. So anyway, I went to pick it up, put it on the back of my garage, and it was amazing. It's a great big thing. And I thought, that's my piece. Anyway, it was only a couple of weeks ago, I thought, it's gone. And I hadn't screwed it down. I found it in an alleyway, and the wind had took it, it's broken in about three or four.
Oh, no,
heartbroken
way.
So I've got it in these places. I'm going to try and carefully glue the whole thing together. But that's probably, that's it. And also, they've said to me and the ex-players, we can have a chair each, and we're going to get it next week.
Nice.
A chair from the boardroom with the White Hart Lane, and I'm very happy.
Very nice.
I'm very, very
that
happy.
Is very
that.
Nice.
So very happy. What about you? Did you get anything?
Do you know what? I was quite lucky in that on the day itself, we all the press were like, oh, can we have our seats? We pretty much sit in the same seats every week.
Yeah.
And no.
You're kidding me.
They
were
laying
out your press seat.
No, we weren't. But fortunately, as people will see on our website and stuff, I often go to the new stadium, see how it looks, followed White Hart Lane as it was slowly becoming rubble. And one of the visits, I was just watching, started to talk to some guy, something to do with the, I obviously won't describe him anyway or name him. And we were talking away, didn't even mention anything like that. And he just said, he went, you're going to be here for another 5 minutes? I was like, I've got to take photos and stuff like that for the website. Went off, came back, it's on this blue thing. And I was like, no. And it was a seat from the stadium. He's like, you know, these are only going to probably get chucked in that big thing over there anyway. Here you
brilliant.
Go, and I was like, oh, you don't know what you've just done for me.
Oh, that's great.
You know, obviously, and then I had my whole tube journey home.
Sit on it on the tube?
No, no.
Did you put it underneath you and then
held it aloft, honestly. Couldn't have been prouder. My wife, totally different when I got in with blue seat.
See, that's the thing. What do you do with it? Everybody's bought these seats and it looks great in the presentation box. You keep it in there. Yeah. But I know people have gone, right, I got it home. What am I going to do? Do I put it now together and sit on it?
No, so I've got little things like that, the team sheet from the day. I've got this weird tradition. I try, and if there's a historic match, it sounds so egotistical, but I try and get in the first questions from each show in the press conference, just as a little thing.
Right.
So,
so
I like the final North London derby. Yeah, I kind of did it. And I think I'm pretty sure I did it with the finale as well. Yeah. I think I did it at Real Madrid as well, actually.
Where are you going on holiday?
pretty much. Yeah. So, just weird little stuff like that. But no, that seat, it's bizarrely in our bedroom, which my wife is still
is
really annoyed at.
Exactly.
I don't know what that says, whether it's some kind of weird kind of what my real passion is or something like that.
I think we know the answer to that.
Exactly.
So I think we all know the answer to that. But I never got a seat. I never did get a seat. Yeah, I should have gone, never got that. I don't know what I kept from. I got a programme signed by. That was a weird one, was when I had to go into the room with all the ex-players, and the managers were all in this room, and then I always have to stand up in front of all of them and just go, right, this is how we're going to do this. Did you notice everybody was in alphabetical order? That was how we did it.
Yes.
Every player was in alphabetical order apart from one. And that was Les Allen, because the first two, it was going to be Clive, Les and Paul. But because Les wasn't quite so good on his feet and wasn't sure exactly where to go, I said, let's do Clive first, because Clive's on the ball, so is Paul. They will go to each side, and then, from then on, each one will walk to... So they go to, you know, Paul and then Clive and then whoever's not long. So that was the only one that was out of order, was that. And we actually worked that out. We sat in a meeting, said, right, what order we do this? And it was worked out. It's like, well, do we do it in... Some people said, do it in eras. And I said, absolutely not, because you're going to lose people early on. Yeah. Or you've got to mix and match, because then you'd like, who's next? Who's next? Mm. Otherwise, you kind of guess. And I didn't want it to be like that. So everybody agreed. And then we looked at alphabetical order. And you know what? It worked really well. Perfect. Everybody mixed up. It really worked well in alphabetical order.
Oh, it was awesome. And you could tell everyone got a really... Obviously, there were a couple that got amazing ovations because of who they are. But everyone got a really good ovation. Mm. Everyone was appreciated. Mm. Even Teddy's... was it a really light suit I remember him wearing?
Yes, it was.
Like,
yeah.
How is that not going to get soaked and see-through or something like that? No, it was strange with Teddy. Teddy was like an idol of mine when I was young. It was first Gary Lineker, then Teddy. But then I also, before I had the Tottenham gig, covered Stevenage. So I kind of got to see him slightly different side to him in the management thing. So in a weird way, maybe slightly kind of humanised him, I suppose, in a way. Kind of used to seeing this idol. But no, I'm with you on the whole Glenn Hoddle stuff. He was at, what was it? I think it was in Nicosia for the Apoel match.
Yeah.
Just typing away as you do. And then suddenly... it's almost like you just feel the back of your neck, hairs on your neck go up, and he walked by and he was sitting right behind me the whole match. And honestly, never have I been so distracted during the match. Amazing. I was like, what's he saying? Whatever he's saying is right.
But you know what bugs me is that he does get this bad rap for a lot of people going, oh, yeah, he was arrogant. This, he is the nicest man. I mean, I've never, he's just like one of the lads, and he's just a lovely, and it's Glenn Hoddle, for Christ's sake. If anybody's got the right to be arrogant, and I'd be more than happy for him to be like that, but he's not. And I think he's a lovely fella.
I spoke to him once and he was absolutely lovely. Right, as sad as it is, we have to move away from White Hart Lane.
Okay.
Pretty much like the fans, and moving on, it was very sad, but we're going to have to...
Oh, better tell you, final.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Very last.
Bring us back in, go on.
The very last, my walking away from White Hart Lane was, I was there, everybody had gone, I thought, right, it's now time for me to say goodbye to White Hart Lane at World Fans Over Space. So, thought, I know what I'm going to do, I'm going to walk downstairs, and I will walk across the pitch, and then I'll go out the other entrance. Nice. So that'll be the way to go. So as I went down to the pitch, the only people there was Maurizio and his staff and the directors. And Donna Cullen came over and was really lovely about everything. And then, and I've been in quite a few, but I've never actually taken a selfie. I've actually taken a selfie. So as I walked over, there was Maurizio, and I said, listen, I've never taken one. Can we do one? And he said, let's go. So me and Maurizio Pochettino walked to the middle of the pitch.
That's class.
Took a selfie and then gave me a hug. And then I went home.
That's beautiful.
That was the way to go.
That's the way to finish.
That was the way to finish.
It really was. Yeah. Actually, there's one other thing I was going to ask you. Only because I know it's something that the fans probably wonder as well. Have you tried to get Daniel Levy on the microphone more? Because he's such a private, shy man. Mm. But any time he actually does talk... it has quite an impact.
Yeah.
And I just wondered, from your point of view, it must be someone that you've kind of said, oh, you know, like maybe even at the finale. Mm. I think because, it was a video, wasn't it?
Yes,
I think
it was.
It was within the video. Was there ever a kind of temptation like, come on, talk to them.
They
do really like you. It's not, you know.
I think so. But then again, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. I mean, you got a man, he's a businessman, and that's his gig. You know, he's not there to be the, you know, the show pony and stand out there and all that. And he talks very well, and as we saw.
He does.
And for me, I don't think he needed to. I don't think it's like, you know, it's like after the death of Diana, a queen, you have to speak to us, you have to speak to us! Didn't need to, and he's one of these people that understood that, you know, he said he's the custodian. He's looking after it until the next person. And he said that. And he honestly feels that way, and I think he's right. And it was all about the play. That's why we didn't have the managers. I mean, some people said, well, how comes the managers didn't come? It was about the players on the pitch. It was about... that's what it was all about.
It
was about our heroes. Yeah, they could have come out. You know, there's arguments for and against, and I can see both. But for me, and I think it was perfect. It just worked perfectly.
Well, that's the thing. I think because people knew the managers were there, so they were kind of like,
and
they
were picked
coming
up
out?
Everybody saw them, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They were there, and it couldn't have been more perfect. It really couldn't have. Right, Wembley.
Yep.
First impressions when you first started in the opening weeks, was there a bit like, ooh, this is different, or is it, for someone like you, it's just another stage kind of...
No, it was... See, I'd done a lot for Wembley in the hospitality. I used to do sort of the England games and the cup finals and stuff like that for them. So I knew the place, knew the rooms. Bigger, much bigger lounges. So I like to, when I do the man of the match, and it's usually 200 people or so in the old Oak Room, which was great, and it was just a lovely amount. Then we're walking into a huge Bobby Moore lounge, you know, sometimes over 1,000 people, different kettle of fish altogether. Just bigger, just more walking around, all that stuff, you know. And just getting used to it. It's just like just going to a different place, doing the same thing, and it just falls, and just doing it in a slightly different way and having to adapt to it, which I think sums up everybody, whatever they're doing at the club, whether it be playing or not, you know it's going to be there for a year.
Definitely.
So we've just got to adapt to it. The pitch, different kettle of fish again altogether, going out there. I'd done the stuff for the... I'd been out there before for when we did the... cup final against Chelsea. I wrote this long speech about what it was about being a Spurs fan. So I'd done that, but the sound is different. I know a lot of people have complained and said, "Oh, I can't hear anything." And so then, and that, they were actually looking at it. I know the last game to try and sort out the problem with that. And also, you hear this delay. So when you interview someone, you speak, and then you hear your voice come back a couple of seconds later.
Oh, it must be off-putting.
Which is, I've dealt with before, so you know you just got to keep going. But then I remember Mickey Hassett coming out and seeing his face, he's just going, "Well, I and you can hear this coming back again, and you can see it thrown a bit because it's all different. You're standing at a different point, and it sounds, but you know, it's just, it's bigger. It's not our home. I think now we're feeling more comfortable. I think everybody, but I think it's it's all of us, everybody in it together, supporters, players, officials, we're all kind of getting used to it as we go along each week by week, and even probably same with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way I've kind of tried to describe it, it's like, it pretty much is exactly moving into a rental place for a year.
Yeah.
You know, at first it's, oh God, this isn't like the home we've been in for years, but then little things start to feel a little bit more comfortable, and as you get on, yeah, it becomes like a home, and I mean, there are little missteps along the way. I mean, obviously, the drummer with his hooked up to the microphone down, a bit like... And I'll be honest, the press played their part in that because we were all like, we're just sitting there kind of looking around and thinking, what? This drummer is like, God, must have enormous like Popeye arms to be getting to sound down. And then it was like, it keeps going. And then obviously some of us were tweeting, the fans started to pick up on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, no one was having a dig or anything. I think there's obviously a fear with a certain club at Stratford, and there were accusations, weren't there, with them. I don't know if they were ever proved, of noise being pumped in and crowd noise. And I think with Spurs, it was also, please don't go that way.
Yeah.
I think Spurs with the finales, obviously, West Ham again got a bit of flack for theirs, whereas Spurs was so simplistically and beautiful.
You know what? I wonder, it was looked at, you know, we were out the corner of our eye. It wasn't like, that's going to affect how we're going to do it. But we looked at that, and thought, I'm not even going to speak for anybody else. I looked at that and thought, we can do it better than that.
Yeah.
We can do it.
It was overblown, taxis on the pitch, all this sort of stuff. Yeah. And yeah, like you said, I mean, you said it earlier, it's about those players. It's about those who trod the turf. It's not about this like ridiculous overblown sense of self. It's just the entertainers, you know? That was what it was. But Wembley, yes. So, I mean, can you see... I suppose you probably talk to the players even more so than I do. Do you feel that there's this kind of change now, and it's like, you know, a comfort
more
and
comfortable.
Ease? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Again, see how I discussed it? See, the thing is, if I speak to them about it, or if you speak to them about it, you're going to hear, it's not a problem.
Yeah.
Of course you are. You know, nobody's going to go, oh, you know, this stadium, what are we going to do? We can't play in it. It feels comfortable. I think the turning... For me, I think Liverpool was the point.
Yeah.
It turned and then
job.
Thought, you know what? This feels right now. Real Madrid was unbelievable. I mean, Christ, I mean, the noise. And that was our home... That was our... It was just, and it felt... It just felt fantastic. And I think we're through whatever anybody wants to call it, hoodoo problem. I mean, let's face it, there was something there. Something wasn't quite clicking. whatever it was, but I think I'm pretty certain that's done now.
I think so. Like you said, the kind of automatic responses players and even managers have, like Pochettino before, in those early games, and let's be honest, Spurs were unlucky in some of those early ones.
Yeah, you're right.
Like Chelsea and Burnley and Swansea as well. And he was coming out with, oh, there's not a problem. It's not a problem. It's nothing to do with the pitch, nothing to do with the stadium. It's about playing football. And we've played at similar-sized pitches and this and everything. But then you just noticed when the first win came, it was very much like, ah, oh, thank goodness we got that out of the way. Oh, all right, okay. You're kind of ignoring what you said before there and all that. It's probably a relief for the journalists not asking him over and over again. But, yeah, I mean...
Is anybody asking anything to do with that now? I mean, when you're going into the press conferences, is that now done and dusted? It's just not going to come up. If we lose another game, is it going to come up again? Or is do you think there's a line drawn under it as far as a journalistic...
With journalism, you can only draw a very faint pencil line under something.
Because there's always something to hang out on.
Yeah, I think if they lose two or three there, it suddenly becomes something. Something about Wembley.
Yeah.
Something, yeah. But like you said, Liverpool and Real Madrid. Honestly, if you could have had a kind of a perfect occasion to sum up the Wembley time, hopefully there'll be more. But that Real Madrid night, like you say, that was as close as you're going to get to White Hart Lane atmosphere, I think. And then... times by three, not in terms of quality, but quantity.
Yeah.
You know, it was the noise. I don't know what it's like where you are, because we're kind of quite high up, whereas in White Hart Lane, we were right next to the manager's dugouts on pitch level. So for us, we get maybe a slightly different version of the acoustics.
Yeah.
What's it like where you are? It must be, is it like deafening?
I'm all over the place. I'm in different places. Sometimes I'll sit up with the old players in the Royal Box bit around there, or I'm down near where the press area is so I can get down to the... do the half time, and I'm often milling around in different places. So it was unbelievable. It was, and it was. You look at, I think the thing for me is looking at. I took my little boy, and I was looking at the scoreboard, and seeing 3-0, and I think everybody was, the amount of people taking pictures of the scoreboard. It was unbelievable. And then Rafa van der Vaart at half time as well, which was brilliant. Another one that I said, look, you know, we got round with Real Madrid. I said, let's get someone. Can you get hold of Rafa van der Vaart? Someone, and they made calls and then said, you know, he's up for it.
That's awesome.
And everybody went bananas about it. It was just brilliant. So then I'm doing my little editing. That was me editing an instrumental version of Give It Up by Casey and the Sunshine Band. Sitting there with Adobe Audition going, right, okay, I've got to try and get this word. I was spending about 3 or 4 hours to get this right, and I go, right, can you play that when I bring him out? Nice. So
I've indirectly praised you again without realising, because in my talking points after that match, I said, whoever thought up van der Vaart was inspired.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you, Alistair.
Well, purely, bless you. Even apart from the fact of how...
I thought you were going to say the editing of Give It Up was magnificent.
That was mind-blowing, quite frankly. But just the fact that often, and we know it, especially with Wembley, crowds disappear at half time. Yeah. Sometimes you don't even get them back for the start of the second half. So to have van der Vaart, someone that's this little kind of like a magical figure, a bit of a Ginola type, that you just hang on every word, so many people stayed. And it was almost because the end of the first half was such a crescendo of noise as it finished, you kept them there, they were still pumped up, and the second half came, they were ready to go again. Whereas sometimes it takes a little while to build it up again. Inspired. So
see, I think, and you'll answer this better than me. So I think it's an important thing that we do, the halftime thing. See, a lot of the time, you know, you get, oh, well, sort of, oh, yeah, go and do that. And it's, but I think it's important. I really think it's important that we have someone, you know, and I think of some of the guests that we've had that really, Mickey was always good. And I remember Rick Torsford coming out and doing the line about the Beatles. And, you know, obviously that didn't turn to be the Dave Clark Five or wherever it was, or the swinging blue jeans. But he was so passionate. And I've often said to players, look, when we go out, when you get in there, they go, oh, I don't know what I'm going to say. Just said, look, just show that you love the club. There's some. Lots of there's been certain celebrities that I love Kenneth Branagh to come out. Yeah. I love and I was so happy that he was involved in the film, because I've seen him. I've seen him at White Hart Lane, and I've asked it, and I've seen him putting a bet on, for Christ's sake.
Really?
I just say, look, Sir Ken, and I love him, and I just look, would you please come on? And I go, yeah, okay, well, I'm not really sure. And Jude Law's a bit like, oh, I don't know. I think. You would love it. All you've got to do, I love Spurs. People would go crazy.
Honestly.
You could have the worst person in the world would come out and say, and if they know.
It's a tap-in. Yeah. It really is. But no, I mean, yeah, from what you were saying, kind of from the other side, I think from the fans, it's seeing, when it, especially the players, seeing someone they haven't seen out there on that turf for years. And also, you'd hope for the players, it's a little bit of a, like a, well, a trip down memory lane. Remember what it's been like on that pitch, the adulation, and, you know, people like Gilly, Alan Kazim, you know, obviously kind of went off the map for a little while, and now he's very much back, and everyone gets to remember what an amazing talent, probably underrated by fans of other clubs because they didn't know him so well. So to get him out there, when was it? It was, back to White Hart Lane, I apologise to people for this, but was it maybe the Arsenal? When did you have, five or six of them on the pitch?
That was when we did the 67 team.
Was that what, 67?
Yeah, because what happened again was, it was, we get a couple from 67. Jimmy Robertson's coming and Joe Kinnear's coming.
Yes.
And it was just, and I was told them two, because we're going to talk about 67. I said, listen, we've got to get them all. You know, there's all these other guys that are going to be there anyway. Don't just have those two. Let's get Pat out. Let's get Mullers out. And who else was there? I can't remember who we had. There was Jimmy. There was anyway. So Phil Beale brought out, although he was injured for the final, and it was before Chivers. Anyway, they'll hate me for not mentioning it. but that was it. And it was. And then we made a thing of it. And let's just have those guys from 67. It was just great.
It was perfect. Current crop of players.
Yeah.
Let's move to them. Is this the best group you've seen in your years of being employed, I suppose?
Yes.
Think? Yeah.
Absolutely.
And the closest knit?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the best team. I think it's the best, I'd go as far as the best crop of players as a group that I have ever seen, personally. First game I saw was 76. Queen's Park Rangers, 14th of February, lost 3-0. And that was, it was Jennings, Terry Naylor, Don McAllister, John Pratt, Willie Young, Keith Osgood, Ralph Coates, Steve Perriman, there was Chivers, Chris Jones, Jimmy Neighbour. It was those days.
And
that was, and still, if I ever meet, and there's a few that I haven't met in that team. When I met Terry Naylor for the first time, I was like, oh my God, because then I automatically become 8 or 9 years old again. So yeah, so that. And then I've seen, as all of us have seen, we've seen the ups, we've seen the downs. We've sat through, you know, when I started, it was through the 90s. Even then, though, we had this sense that we were going to do something because we always had a couple of great players. We had a Ginola, we had Sheringham, we had some world-class players, but we never had the whole set, did we?
Yeah.
You know, we had a couple, we had this great coin collection, we had a couple of them in there, but there was a lot missing. So, but whereas now, I mean, my God, what a great set of players we've got.
Definitely. It's a real team. And it's weird in that just the way Tottenham has never been is that players have become stars within the Tottenham team, whereas normally it was more a case of, we'd pluck someone like you say, one famous person or two with, you know, Ricky and Ozzy. And now we've got the likes of Dele Alli, who, you know, probably only, you know, lower league football watchers had known of before, and Harry Kane, who was a lone traveller who'd go off all over the place. And it's a very different Tottenham Hotspur, and it's very much one moulded in Poch's image.
And the other thing, which is, when before we play Crystal Palace, said, if this is truly the Spurs that we know and love, we are going to lose at home to Crystal Palace. We are going to lose. We've beaten Real Madrid. This is going back to the 70s. They even did it in the 60s. They would go and play an amazing game, and then they get beat at home. It's just the Spurs way. You know what? And we didn't know. We won 1-0. Not the Spurs way. And to win, this is a different thing altogether.
It really is. And Poch, one of his maybe second or third kind of things he said in the press conference was very much after the Real Madrid victory, which, you know, he'd be every right to be just standing up with arms out, love me. How cool is that? But he didn't. He'd immediately turned. He said, honestly, it's as big a match against Palace, because if we lose that, we slip behind and it's all kind of been for nothing.
Mm.
And it's just, that's the mentality. And you can see him, you can see he's a really strange manager in press conferences in that he doesn't get over the top when they win.
Mm.
And when they lose, he's always looking for why there's little strands of positives and what they can improve on. But you could just sense this real burning kind of, not an anger, maybe more a frustration, and how in the hell do I fix this, because I don't want that to happen again. I think that's probably what the best managers have got, is never publicly criticise, but you just feel this undercurrent of I'm going to rip into them on Monday and we're going to fix all of these little things that they didn't do that I told them to do.
You know, it's funny, when I do the Man of the Match interview, and after the game, even after Real Madrid, I always say the same thing. I say, so you get a day off tomorrow? They laugh. They laugh. Yeah. And they go, yeah, right. No, back in tomorrow. Back straight in there. Professionals. And it's a, not, you know, this is a proper outfit. I mean, this is a very exciting time for being a Spurs fan.
Oh, it really is. And but it's, you hear this from the other players that Pochettino has worked with, the Southampton players and Espanyol. He works them like ridiculously hard, and they love him for it. And you think, what? How does that work? You know, in any of our workplaces, if we were working insane hours, there'd be this kind of anger and bitterness. But he's just got something about him.
Yeah,
just an aura. He did. It was lovely. I went to his book launch the other week at Hotspur Way, and he, because a journalist for once, we were kind of pushed to the back of the room.
Yeah,
and it was all his friends and family, and Daniel was there, Donna, and people like that, and the warmth in the room for him. You could just, and but it's reciprocated. He's a lot. I don't want to use Mr. Mourinho, but there's certain managers out there you very much feel it's about them.
Yep.
This is my success. If we fail, it was someone else's fault. But with him, it's the group. Everything's about a collective. Everything. Every, even if you, there's a couple of players. He's got a couple of favourites, you can tell. The likes of Ben Davies, if I ask him about him, he'll big him up. But ultimately, it's about his collective. And I don't think we've ever had that at Tottenham. And I mean, you know, there's been some great managers. Harry, Martin, Joel, Ramos era that was, well, still brought a trophy. But there was never this sense of Tottenham being a unit.
No.
And I think that's probably what's going to serve as well going forward.
Yeah, I think so too.
And talking of going forward.
Yes.
This lovely kind of gleaming new stadium with all its glass that I saw the other day.
Yeah.
What have you played any involvement in that yet in terms of kind of plotting out what your role will be? I don't know, sound, acoustics, even thinking as far ahead of the opening ceremony, will you have anything to do with that?
I think, again, I'm on a need-to-know basis. It's because I've got too much of a big mouth, they don't trust me. No, it's I've, the only thing I've seen of it is when I've gone down to the shop and I've had a meeting down there and I have a little walk around and then I go home and that's it. So, no, I will, I'll, you know, if they want me, then I'm contacted, then I'll be there. But at the moment, no, it's going to be incredible, though, isn't it? So exciting.
Just, I went, when was it? I was there. It was earlier this week. It was in Monday, I think. That single tier south stand. Oh my God. You can just see now how it's steep, but not in a, oh God, we're all going to fall over kind of way, but in a, it's going to be a wall of noise.
Oh, that'd be great.
It's an amazing, these tree things that they've put in as well, which apparently are going to hold the structure.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. But I mean, I was going to ask you, and obviously this is not in any way for you to then answer the question, but are you plagued with people saying, it's going to be ready on time? It's surely, it's not going to be ready on time. Look at it, look at it.
Yeah, I get asked all the time.
Yeah, and but I suppose it's one of those where you just got to trust in the club. I mean, personally, from a journalist side, I haven't heard anything that suggests otherwise.
No.
You know, it's, I think they've got, is it 1,300 people working on site now?
That,
that tells me every effort is being put towards this.
And if you, and I can imagine, I mean, I don't know this, but I imagine once they're working inside, then that will go to 24 hours a day because there's not going to be any noise because everything's going to be inside. But you remember those rumours. I remember those rumours at the end of last season, people going, they're going to, it's going to be ready for the start of next season. Did you see that one? They're going to move in. And all of a sudden, someone puts it on Facebook. It spreads like wildfire. And then before you know it, I'm going, well, I've heard, then people are going, I've heard the noise, the sound that people saying that you're going to be in the next. Come on. I mean, really, for Christ's sake. And now it's, oh, it's going to be. So, as far as I know, as, well, I mean, you probably know more than me, Alistair, to be honest with you. It looks like it's, you know, I can't imagine that it's not going to be done if it's prepared. You know, that's the idea. Yeah. You know, we're probably not going to go in there. It'll probably be a West Ham situation. First games will be away. International break, maybe start of September.
Could
I don't
be,
know, but we'll see.
But even, it doesn't have to all be complete in a way, doesn't it? It doesn't have to be literally, here's the keys, it's ready. It just, functioning, safety, all of that.
I'm happy
stuff.
To stand for a while, you know, if you see, take your seat along. See, if there's any problem, you've got your seat. Anybody that's bought seats from White Hart Lane, we're missing a few, bring them along and just sit on those and then we'll have the other ones for you in the next game.
Finally, my wife will know there was a reason behind taking that seat.
Yeah.
And that's it. But no, I just, it looks amazing. And I don't think, and I, you know, we have a lot of readers from kind of international ways over in America, places like in Asia, and I'd love them to get a sense of how enormous this thing is going to be.
Yeah.
Honestly, I always try and take this one photo every time I go because I love it. When you walk out from White Hart Lane Station to the crossroads, crossroads, to the T junction, and look across, and you see the old buildings down the high street, and this thing,
monster.
Oh yeah. My god! Honestly, yeah. It's like I don't want to use a spaceship as landing because a spaceship kind of signifies this kind of outlandish design, but it's not. It's a yeah. really classy. Yeah. look, and it just sits so far. And for the first time I got down Worcester Avenue, which I hadn't been able to get down recently, same again. It's yeah. houses, people's houses. And someone said to me, oh my god, what must it be like for them? I was like, I would buy one in honestly. yeah. Can you imagine looking yeah, out and looking up at that every day? It just.
But have you stood on the high road and looked at it and you think it seems a bit further along, because I'm imagining I'm looking at it as if it's the old White Hart Lane. So how comes I'm on this? Because, do you know what I mean? Because it's yeah. slightly along.
Yeah.
So you're trying to get your bearings right yeah. when you look at it.
Oh, it is. And I suppose the other interesting thing that comes up is the amount of people that are still going to call it the lane.
Yeah.
Do you think you will?
Don't know.
Yeah, I'm there. I'm exactly in that position.
Don't know. Because it doesn't have a name at the moment.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't know. No, I really don't know.
Yeah, it's weird because someone asked me that a few weeks back, and I was like, oh, you know what? I think maybe I still do refer to the area as the lane for some reason.
Yeah.
So, like, when I'm going up, I say to my boss, I'm going to go up and take some photos of the lane.
Yeah.
But I kind of, yeah, I don't mean the ground. I always refer to it as the new stadium at the moment.
Yeah.
And there's all these, I know there's this groundswell of, let's call it new White Hart Lane. Let's just call it White Hart Lane. It's like, but then you're doing yourself out of, I don't know, £200-300 million worth that yeah. can go towards the club.
Let me run this by you. How long have, yeah, White Hart Lane, but how long have we been referring to it as the lane? I don't think it's we all say, oh, yeah, go to the lane. I don't know whether I always called it that going back 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, that's a great question.
You know, I don't know whether it's the lane. And, of course, it was the all the merchandise, the lane. But, and you know, we are Tottenham from the lane. Mm. I don't know whether that's actually come out of that song that all of a sudden people
Ooh,
are saying the lane.
A shout, yeah, it you could know, be. Yeah, it's
because
I don't know when I started,
I
using
can't
that.
Remember the old days people actually calling it the lane.
The lane, yeah, just yeah, White Hart Lane.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know. So we'll
we shall see.
We will see.
Well, they're certainly going to change the station name, aren't they? To I think it's just going to be called Tottenham Hotspur.
Is that right?
I think it is. Yeah. So
it's when you drive over the North Circular, when you come around the North Circular, and then you go going into London, and then you look over on the left hand side, and then I always look to see if I can see the lane, but and you sort of like just see it over the middle bit. Oh, there it is. Whereas now, you can see it from miles as you're driving. There it is. It's brilliant. Can you imagine what it'd be like driving up there with the lights on? Not that I'll be able to drive past it because I'll be in there.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You know, oh,
that'd be amazing. Another thing I want to ask you, it's just a thought that's come to me in the last few days. Is there a bit of a Martin Joel, Ramos, Redknapp situation with the stadiums? In terms of, I think the night Martin Joel got sacked, people would have gone absolutely bananas if they then brought Harry Redknapp in. But then they had this
yep.
period with Ramos.
I agree.
Where it was, you know, like we say, it got the trophy, but ultimately, league-wise, it wasn't good enough.
He was, at the time, I had this conversation the other day, he was the guy to go for, wasn't he? He was at Seville.
He was the AVB of his kind of era,
exactly,
wasn't he?
Yeah. Every time, you know, and I'm speaking purely personally as a Spurs fan. When we look back, oh, yeah, he was terrible. Oh, yeah, yeah. At the time, we got the best manager at the possible time that we could have got.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. But unfortunately, a lot of them didn't work.
Exactly.
You know, it was the same with Santini. And it was like France didn't do as well as we were expecting them to
after
do.
After the announcement, exactly,
And then all those... But anyway, sorry. Oh, look, I broke the chair there.
That's all right, that's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, and kind of my weird, far-fetched kind of comparison is, with the stadiums, maybe had we gone from White Hart Lane and the beauty of it, that finale, and then gone straight into this cold new stadium, maybe people have been about, oh, it's not like the lane.
Oh, I see what you're
but
saying.
But now,
we
had this year at Wembley, a lot of people grumbled about it and everything.
Yeah.
I want to go home.
Yeah.
And kind of almost like, we are going home. We've got this great new place, and it's kind of put a slightly different spin on it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Purely, it's just a circumstance. It's a situation that's happening.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I think a year away and then to go back in will be the excitement will... Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, someone said the other day, and it was a great statement.
It is.
When I put a video up of the stadium, and someone said, oh, the day Harry Kane scores that first goal at the new stadium, the roof is going to come off. I hope it doesn't, because that set it back massively. But and you can kind of feel it. And and they've been very clever, the CGI little videos they've used and the 3D images. And I was lucky enough, I don't know if they let you do that, the whole VR stuff.
Yeah, I said, feeling a bit.
So did I. I didn't think I was.
I don't know about you. I've got this thing about VR. You don't know what the people are doing around you. You know what I mean? It's that no pay. You think, I've got these goggles on, people are sticking their two fingers up behind me and I can't see it. You know, that's how I got this thing about
selfies.
Look at the But it is, it's amazing, isn't it? So clever. So clever.
It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be such a stadium.
And if the stadium's not ready, then what they'll do is just put you in the seats and everybody will wear the goggles.
Exactly.
Until the stadium's finished.
They may be at Wembley, but you just sit there and watch them.
You just put the goggles on and it feels like you're actually there. Yeah.
Well, very much. It's going to be a wonderful stadium and hopefully, obviously, you'll be part of it for many years to come.
I hope so, mate.
Because you are a proper asset to Tottenham Hotspur, honestly. As I said before, it's probably not something you expect to hear from people, but as a kid, that was awful. I was going to massively make you sound older there. Not as a kid, as a younger man.
Yes.
Obviously, always remember your voice booming over the tannoy.
Yeah.
And then from a professional perspective, to see you doing it as well and what you did with that crowd. Honestly, your legacy, whether you want it or not, that is your White Hart Lane legacy.
And thank you. And listen, thank you for the words, because someone sent me that, and that was it. And I showed me kids, and I was very happy with that, so thank you.
Exactly what you deserved. Thank you so much for coming on.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Join us next month for a new episode on Tottenham Hotspur and their new stadium for football.london.